Herman Cain is now claiming character assassination, which gives him just one more thing in common with Fritz the Cat. Good morning, everybody. This is Blacklisted Talk Radio. I'm King David McKenzie. It's 11:01 on killradio.org from Los Angeles, California. In case those of you who were not listening 10 minutes ago were wondering, what is he talking about? I started early because there is a digital clock here in the studio, and the digital clock had indicated that it was the top of the hour. However, apparently it has not been reset since the winds of the other night. What was it? Wednesday night? Had knocked the power off in this area of Los Angeles. So I was unfortunately interrupting John's replay there. Sorry, John. A little early. So, but having experienced all of that, this week we have a few more items in relation to Blacklisted Old Time Radio, and also there was a fascinating interview with someone up on indiebay.org that I wanted to try to get on the air. So that also is coming up a little later on. First, though, while I think of it, will be, as usual, the roller derby scores and fixtures. Courtesy of DerbyNewsNetwork.com. Especially of interest, considering that coming up later on this weekend, there are two Southern California leagues that are having their annual championship tomorrow night. And we'll be getting to that as soon as is possible. First off, for the action from last weekend, from Saturday, 26th of November, on the other side of the Pacific Ocean, in fact, is where these are from. First off, actually in Australia, although one involves a New Zealand team, New Zealand squad. First in Brisbane, Northern Brisbane, a doubleheader for Rat City. First, Rat City, number 5 seeding in the world. First, one Rat City squad took on Sun State and beat them 232-56. Then another Rat City squad took on Northern Brisbane and won even more handily, 336-71. Then, in Sydney, the Australia versus New Zealand bout, Richter City 115, Sydney 161. So Sydney, you know, so the Australians, the Aussies beat the Kiwis in that matchup. Now, up in Toronto, they are having the Roller Derby World Cup. The first bouts took place yesterday. Team Canada, the host, of course, defeated Team France 244-17. Team Australia defeated Team Germany 136-53. Team Ireland.
Go Celtics.
Team Ireland defeated Team Argentina 164-51. And Team Finland had their handed to them by Team Australia. The Aussies won that 179-29. Today, in the Roller Derby World Cup, there are all manner of bouts. Team Ireland, Team England, Team New Zealand, Scotland, Sweden, Canada, Finland, Germany, France, Brazil, USA, Argentina, all participating in that. And the championship is going to be on Sunday for that up in Toronto. DerbyNewsNetwork.com has all of the information that you'll be needing on it. Now, here in the United States of America, in the great state of California, here in Los Angeles, California, tomorrow night we will have the Los Angeles Derby Dolls 2011 League Championship between the Swarm and the Sirens. And in Ventura County, their league championship is taking place between the Sucker Punch Sallies and the Brass Knuckle Bettys. And at the same time, up in Bakersfield, a doubleheader involving the Divas and Central Cali. Central California Atomic Assault will be taking on the Bakersfield Divas, and then the Central California Rock and Rolla will be taking on the Bakersfield Divas Rough Cuts. That's all happening within driving distance of Los Angeles County tomorrow night. Elsewhere, Rose City, which is Portland, Oregon. The Rose City Newbies will be taking on the Southern Oregon RG, Roller Girls. Providence, Rhode Island, they have their league championship going on. Revenge of the NHRDs against the Saconnet River Roller Rats. And then the Old Money Honeys going up against the Mob Squad. McLean County, Virginia, State Line, and McLean County will be taking each other on. In Choice City, Cheyenne will be taking on the Choice City Renegades. At Cal State, the Central Coast Rough Diamonds will be taking on Cal State. In Iowa, the Eastern Iowa Squad will be taking on the Iowa Rollin' Aces. In San Diego, the Phoenix Rattlesnakes, the San Diego Roller Derby Aftershocks, that will be a matchup there. Phoenix Rattleskates. Did I say Rattlesnakes? Phoenix Rattleskates taking on the San Diego Roller Derby Aftershocks. Rage City. North Pole will be taking on Rage City Devils Club. And one over in the UK at Tiger Bay. Wales versus England. Tiger Bay, which is the Welsh organization will be taking on the Central City Sleigh Bells in the December, in the first weekend of December, about going on over there tomorrow night, their time. Then Sunday, we'll have Slaughter County going up against Bellingham in Bellingham, Washington. And at Ballarat, down under, South Sea will be taking on Ballarat. And that's all going on a little later on this weekend, wherever you happen to be in the world of Derby. Now, there is a fundraising effort going on for the next month to try to keep the Long Beach League afloat so that they can go into a new season in 2012. And I'm going to try to get some folks on from Long Beach in the next few days, in the next few weeks, to talk about not only that, but also to talk about roller derby in general. Try to, you know, try to get some conversation going so that those of you who are listening and don't necessarily know, you know, exactly what roller derby is about nowadays, as opposed to the slightly kayfabed version going on in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s. Anyway, that is going to be something that I want to definitely get done this December. And so that is all that's going on in relation to Derby on Blacklisted Talk Radio. 13 after 11 now on this second morning of December 2011. I'm King David McKenzie. And I believe I shall give you this little bit so that I can catch up on a few things. And in fact, I haven't had a chance to listen to this yet either. So now on Memorex, here we have DJ Bennett with this week's Kill Radio Weekly News.
Hi, this is DJ Bennett for the Kill Radio News team, and this is the weekly news and review that was posted by Genevieve Smith on the Harpers.org website on the 29th of November, 2011. Yes, folks, the year is almost done. I'm a pretty hardline skeptic. I believe in evidence first, and I kind of think the truth is important. I think that it's bad for people to believe things that aren't true. Now, I'm not going to talk about religion or anything like that, but I do think that I guess I'm going to use the slippery slope argument, all right? So say you believe somebody when they tell you that they've seen a UFO or they saw a ghost. You believe their story. You say there's, you know, there's something to investigate if they have a story like that. So you accept it when somebody says one of these paranormal things. Now, does it hurt you because you believe in ghosts on that specific level? Probably not. But the thing is that with belief systems, when you go into an irrational belief and accept it, suddenly that starts to shift other beliefs in your system. And there's where the problem lies. Say you believe in UFOs. You think that people really are seeing strange things in the sky when they report such matters. And maybe you think that they're, you know, alien spacecraft from another galaxy or something like that. Okay, you accept that. Now, does that hurt you to believe that? I don't know. But let's take this step a little further. If you believe that there are, you know, alien spaceships visiting Earth, does that mean you believe in alien abductions? You believe there have been people who've been abducted by aliens and anally probed? Or you believe that crop circles are evidence of aliens coming to Earth? You see, it starts to slide. So does that mean you believe in Bigfoot now, because Bigfoot sometimes is related to UFOs? If you believe in Bigfoot, then you believe in the Loch Ness Monster. If you believe in ghosts, then you believe in poltergeists. You believe in curses and hauntings and witches and all that. See, there are definitely belief systems that are definitely, unequivocally harmful. When somebody thinks that vaccines cause autism, that's harmful. As has been reported, you know, since 2007, there have been like 80,000 people have gotten diseases that they wouldn't have gotten if people had been vaccinated. And approximately 800 children have died in that time period. Or what about the so-called AIDS dissidents who don't think that there is such a thing as AIDS? And they think that taking AIDS meds, AZT and that stuff, that's what really causes the harm. Or no, they use drugs, and that's really what it is. Their systems are weak because they're using drugs. There's no such thing as HIV. Well, AIDS dissidents, and if you go to the AIDS Truth website, you'll find a long list of AIDS dissidents who have died of AIDS. Now, other AIDS dissidents have said, no, he didn't die of AIDS, he died of pneumonia. He was 37 and he died of pneumonia. No, he probably died of AIDS. Fela Kuti, the famous African singer, he was famously an AIDS skeptic. He would drink his own urine and said that would make him healthy. He died of AIDS. You know? When people believe things that aren't true, the result can be very bad. It can kill children. It can kill adults. It can kill people. It's just a fact. So when somebody says, oh, there's no harm in believing in angels, or it's no harm to believe in psychics, or it's no harm to believe that somebody actually talks to the dead. No, I'm sorry. It is harmful. And it does require that phrase that I've said so many times, critical judgment. You need to evaluate claims that are told to you that your first thought is, well, that probably can't be true. Now, see, I love science and I love reality because I think reality is a lot more interesting than people's fantasies. Currently, the ideas about dark energy and dark matter are now getting tied up with string theory and the possibilities that there is a multiverse out there. That, to me, is a lot more interesting than 40 years ago, Lonnie Zamora saw what looked like a spaceship with aliens getting off of it someplace in Nevada. You know what I mean? I think reality is a lot more interesting than fantasy. I know most people would prefer to fantasize and prefer to think that their dreams are real. So this is the Weekly News and Review, and talk about dream catching and dream disappointing. What a week we had. This is the news of the preceding week. The Congressional Super Committee, assigned to devise a plan for reining in the federal deficit, failed to reach an agreement, triggering $1.2 trillion in budget cuts that will take effect in 2013, including drastic cuts to defense spending, Medicare, and Social Security. Senate Democrats plan to follow up the failed talks by introducing $400 billion in new spending legislation over the coming weeks, while Republicans indicated that they would try to configure the automatic cuts in order to spare defense programs. In other words, it's okay to cut Medicare and Social Security, because that doesn't really affect the Republicans. But we've got to make sure that we keep up billions and billions of dollars in unnecessary defense spending. Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat of New York, said the knives are over our heads. Well, all I can think of is that the popularity of the Senate and Congress is nil. Nobody likes them. Nobody thinks they're doing any good. And the partisan deadlock is one of the most destructive things that I've ever seen in my lifetime. Protesters with the Occupy Wall Street movement ate donated Thanksgiving dinners in encampments across the country, while occupations in Philadelphia and Los Angeles faced eviction deadlines. "We've been sitting around drinking coffee," said a Philadelphia occupier. "This is bringing us back together." Here in Los Angeles, the mayor offered a building and some public areas for gardening to the Occupy people. Now, I can't think that the movement rejected that because it didn't sound good to have a space to go, a building to go to have General Assembly in. That couldn't have been a bad thing. It's just that appeasing the Occupy movement's immediate comfort is still not answering the questions of unfairness that is what Occupy is about. Now, in the course of Black Friday sales across the United States, and I certainly hope that none of the people listening to me went out and spent money on Black Friday. I didn't. Or spent any money on Internet Monday. I didn't. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do what they expect you to do. Anyway, in the course of these sales, police knocked a grandfather unconscious at a Walmart in Arizona, tasered a man at a Walmart in Alabama. An off-duty police officer pepper sprayed unruly shoppers at a Walmart in North Carolina. A woman pepper sprayed fellow shoppers to get a discounted Xbox 360 at a Walmart in California. And customers rioted over $2 waffle irons at a Walmart in Arkansas. The most important statement in all that: stay out of Walmart. Get away from Walmart. Meanwhile, Andrea True, singer of the disco song More, 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 what timing, died. And IBM noted a downward trend in the height of high-heeled shoes. Egypt's military installed a Mubarak-era prime minister to head the country's interim government, fueling protests that have seen thousands of people wounded and at least 40 killed. Yemen's president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, agreed to step down after 33 years in power. And Swazi officials denied that Queen Nothando Dube, the 12th wife of King Mswati, was kicked out of the royal palace by the Queen Mother for pepper spraying a guard. At least that wasn't at Walmart. An Australian hospital aborted the wrong fetal twin. And a Connecticut town accidentally elected the wrong man because of a ballot typo. The FBI arrested seven Amish men for a series of beard attacks on other Amish men. The bodies of 50 men were found in western Mexico, some naked and some marked with the names of drug gangs. The mayor of a Peruvian coastal town said the drinking water there was turning residents gay. And a Pakistani woman attempted to cook and eat her husband. There could be two factors behind her intention to cook the husband, explained the local police chief. One is to destroy the evidence, and the other would be her immense hatred of the man. Scientists discovered a 150,000-year-old skull bearing signs of head trauma from a projectile, which would make it the earliest known evidence of violence between humans. Psychopaths were found to have uniquely structured brains. An English woman was found guilty of microwaving a kitten. Engineers unveiled plans to create cyborg insects. And South Korean researchers were building a prison guard robot. We are now working on refining its details, explained one of the scientists, to make it look more friendly to inmates. Makes me think of RoboCop. A self-proclaimed doctor was under arrest in Florida for injecting a mixture of cement, superglue, and flat tire sealant into a woman's buttock as part of an augmentation procedure. 15 Indian eunuchs died when a fire broke out at the annual eunuch convention in New Delhi. I've been hearing about those for ages. Audience members were experiencing seizures during the film Twilight Breaking Dawn. Two Illinois lawmakers proposed that Chicago become a state. And Scottish students who burned Barack Obama in effigy apologized to the president. Willard Mitt Romney's barber, Leon D. Magistris, revealed that Romney does not use gel or dye in his hair. I will tell him to mess it up a little bit, said D. Magistris. He wants a look that is very controlled. He is a very controlled man. The Vatican's chief exorcist warned Catholics about the dangers of yoga. You think you are doing it for stretching, said Father Gabriel Amorth, but it leads to Hinduism. Thanks, Genevieve Smith, and thank you for listening to this latest presentation of the Weekly News and Review from killradio.org. And listen to my radio program, The Chill Room, Friday nights at 11 p.m. here on Kill Radio. I'll see you next week. Have a good one.
And thank you, DJ Bennett, for that particular digest. So I'm now up to schedule as far as the digest goes anyway. Right now, 11:27 on Blacklisted Talk Radio. On killradio.org. From Los Angeles, California, 2nd of December, 2011. I've been taking a quick look at Crooks and Liars. Which is the website of wonderful, wonderful political information of a progressive bent in the United States of America. And interestingly, there was there's a video that's been posted there, credited to Tina Dupuy, about her experience at the raid on Occupy LA on Tuesday night. And she talked to Sam Cedar about that experience, and I'm assuming that that is the audio that we will be hearing in this particular video clip that is up on crooksandliars.com. Let us have a quick listen to what Tina and Sam have to say.
On the phone, are you the managing editor?
Yeah, you said director on your website there. I'm a really bossy editor. How's that? We can compromise.
Okay. I screwed up. Sorry. Managing editor of crooksandliars.com, among the, like, three other jobs you seem to have.
I do.
Tina Dupuy.
I do. I'm the 99%.
You're working overtime.
All the time.
So last night, I woke up in the middle of the night because I was sick. I was coughing. And whenever I'm in that situation, I run to my computer and look on Twitter to see what's going on. And sure enough, they were evicting the Occupy LA. The cops were. And I saw you were in the thick of it. So tell us what happened.
Well, I got a text from my source at the LA Times who said, "Yeah, you should probably get down here." And I showed up, and there were probably three times as many media trucks as I'd seen there before, and some of the streets had started to get blocked off, and I was able to get in. And there were just probably about, I estimated, 1,500 protesters maybe in the park and near the street, and around midnight we kind of got the word that they were coming in, quote unquote, and about 12:30 there were 1,400 members of the Los Angeles Police Department, all in helmets, that kind of just showed up. A lot of people by that time fled, so there were basically one protester per or one cop per protester at that point. And
that's the kind of ratio that any parent of a school child would love.
Right, exactly. Isn't that amazing? I had something similar. But, they were incredibly, it's an intimidating force that kind of showed up. There were, of course, hazmat suits, because that was the big line that Viragosa thought that everyone was stinky and dirty, and they had successfully, the protesters, brought the homeless problem to City Hall, the steps of City Hall, instead of two blocks away where it's been for the past few decades. Los Angeles has the largest permanent homeless encampment in the world. And it's two blocks away from City Hall, and it's been there forever. It's pretty much no man's land, and they've been camping on the sidewalks there for as long as anyone can remember. The police department, or the police station in Skid Row, doesn't have any windows. Not bars on the windows, but there's just no windows. It's like a bomb shelter, and there's all this kind of lore that's the place, and if you want to park in the red zone, you can do that in Skid Row, because there's no tow truck that would go down there. So the homeless people, it's in this kind of cruel irony of the protesters bringing out wealth inequality and also attracting homelessness at the same time, and that being the reason why the mayor would no longer get the protest. It's cruel. But anyway.
Yeah,
so,
well, I want to talk about that for a second, though, because, it was interesting. I saw earlier in the day, I saw reports that the LAPD was was beginning to stage at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
And then I saw some notion, I think it was a CBS story, just as they were beginning to move in on the occupation, saying that the police were worried about feces being thrown at them. Mm-hmm. It really is. That was really the angle that they've used, that every city seems to have used, right? It was just sort of health and safety type of situation. When, of course, there's absolutely zero evidence that there's been any health or safety issues that didn't exist prior to the occupations in all these cities.
Right. Well, the health inspectors were actually at Occupy LA every day. I mean, that was what the occupiers told me, that they were there from, the first week. It was a 61-day occupation, and they were there every day, and every day they would come in, and the health inspectors would have suggestions or not, and the occupiers would adhere to that because they really wanted to stay in that camp. That's the line, and the local press, or at least the local news, the TV broadcasters, really fed into that, where they I'm going to post a video later of one of our local yokels going around and going, oh my God, look at all the trash, which is, who goes to a Dodger game and then it goes to the Dodger, instead of covering the game, they go and cover, the Dodger Stadium, how untidy all the fans are.
Right.
It's just a ridiculous line. But you're absolutely right. It's like, oh, it's filthy. Oh, it's filthy. And it's like, you know, the LAPD has no evidence. And really, they had a six-hour standoff on when they got they first closed the park on Sunday night, Monday morning. There were about 2,000 people that just kind of chanted and hung out for 6 hours until they had to the cops had to reopen the street for morning commute traffic. And the only instances of violence were, you know, some kids who showed up and threw bottles at police, and the protesters pushed them out and gave them over to police. And because they, Los Angeles specifically, have said that they are militantly nonviolent. So there were, you know, they have all decided collectively and by group consensus that they are not going to be violent whatsoever, and anybody who perpetrates violence will be given over to police because they do not represent the group. So the police had 6 hours of watching these kids, watching these protesters, just not, you know, chant and be lively and express themselves, but not in any way be violent. And so, of course, the local yokels are now saying, you know, well, they're kind of nonviolent, but they did get arrested. And it's like,
right,
okay, you really do not understand what nonviolent struggle means, because that's kind of the point.
Now, of these local yokels, how many of them ended up in the press pool to get the good coverage of this?
You got it, all of them. Yeah, or, you know, that was
yeah. Wow, I'm sure that's
healthy. They tried to kick me out of the press pen.
Were you in there?
I wasn't in the press pool. I was in the park until midnight. I got a text saying that you need to get out of the park by midnight. So I did that, and I went over to the press pen. I had my press credentials because I'm in 85 newspapers a week. Because the LAPD doesn't think a blog is a real publication yet.
Right.
It's apparently 2003 at the LAPD, if I'm being kind. Anyway, so, you know, I'm a legitimate journalist. I even write for magazines and stuff, you know. Anyway, I had my badge on, my credentials on my chest, and he said, and this cop was kicking some protesters out of the press pen, and he said, you know, where are your credentials? And I showed him, and he said, those aren't the right credentials. I said, yes, they are. And he said, no, those aren't our credentials. And I said, I'm not going to have your credentials because I don't cover crime, I cover politics. And he said, you can't be here without the right credentials. I said, yes, I can. I'm a legitimate journalist, and there's also the First Amendment. And he said, look, that's not my problem. I said, yes, it is, and I have a right to be here. And then he got distracted and walked away. But I was, you know, I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, really, you're going to check my car? I was like, do you want to, I can show you my byline if that helps.
My understanding
is they wanted just their people.
Did you hear this? My understanding is that the people in the press pool were not allowed to tweet during the raid.
I did not hear that. What I heard about that was that they had about 12 people who were in the press pool who would be given protective clothing, and a police escort in order to go into the park and film and cover and
protective
do whatever.
Protective clothing?
Protective clothing. Not hazmat, because there were people there. You know, I mean, it was like I'm sure it was an effective visual to kind
right.
of make them look like disgusting hippies to have the hazmat suits. But they were given, I guess I'm assuming gas masks or, you know, vests or whatever. That
yeah,
was
or
what
just
I
something
was,
to
I,
make it look like there's a reason why we should be.
Right,
we're going
like
to justify
we're in
why
Iraq.
We show
yeah.
up looking like the military. It's just basically a way of taking those dupes who go into the pool and make them feel like you're going into a dangerous situation, as opposed to just a bunch of people who are incredibly peaceful, sitting down and exhausted.
Right. People who've been sleeping in a park, and people who are, you know, I mean, this is the whole concept of nonviolent struggle is to break arbitrary rules. And then when the authority doesn't let you or lets you break arbitrary rules without enforcing their rules, which means that their rules mean nothing and you win, or they enforce their arbitrary rules and they look like, you know, douches for, you know, enforcing arbitrary rules. Either way, nonviolence wins the PR war. So the only other way to kind of discredit these people is to make them look like they're filthy.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see what happens as many of the physical occupations end, at least in the short run, and the movement becomes more about the actions it takes, what the criticism is going to be, you know, what the narrative is going to be. Because at this point, the only thing that they've been able to be attacked upon is this idea that there's a hygiene problem or right. that there's a safety problem. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when this movement starts to get more involved in foreclosures, starts to get more involved in labor strikes. It's going to be interesting to see what the criticism is.
Well, that's what I've heard from the occupiers who have lost their camp, you know, that they're actually, you know, they're relieved that they can spend less time in what they're calling social services, like feeding people and everybody, you know, within who comes to the park, and more on social action. And so losing the encampment is actually much more liberating in that way, that they can spend their time focusing not on the day-to-day struggle as to, you know, whether or not there's enough hand sanitizer in the camp, or personal disputing kind of issues, and more onto, like you said, you know, foreclosures or actions or policy issues or demands or whatever else they're going. Because the energy is still there, and there's still people, you know, wanting to get involved and wanting to give their time for this movement. But the camping was really a very specific symbol, and it was a very specific kind of person who wanted to spend time in a park, who could spend time in a park and sleep there. I've been covering these things, and like porta potties completely freak me out. I'm surprised, you know, another issue for another time.
Yeah, we're going to need a different interview for that. One more thing I wanted to just bounce off you was that I've seen that an LAPD commander, that they were taking swabs of people, I guess presumably in their mouths, with like, you know, those long Q-tips. And people were assuming they were taking them for DNA testing. But supposedly they were testing them for staph infection. Have you heard anything about that?
Wow. No, I haven't. But again, the visual of them being infected and having these disgusting, you know, cooties, you know, I believe that was on Monday night, Monday morning, that's what everyone kind of, there was somebody on the news who just kind of blurted out that, you know, they're definitely working with some kind of PR people, because they've been really able to, the LAPD, because they've been pretty good about this for by LAPD standards,
right?
And so that sounds to me, I'm not familiar, again, I did not hear that report, but I did see them in hazmat suits show up. And that's been, you know, the press pool who are, you know, in my opinion, complicit with this kind of, with this narrative, is that they are disgusting and horrible, you know, filthy people who are, you know, clearly have all sorts of diseases that they're going to spread to anybody who goes to City Hall. The funny thing now is that what used to be an open park for everybody is now gated in. They've erected a fence all around City Hall, and so it's like you know, they've said, for the mayor has said that he was going to open it during certain hours a day for free speech. Which, you know, when a government official says, you know, where you can have free speech, it's never good. It's always a bad sign, but now there's this big fence over it. So City Hall now looks like you know, it really does belong in an Escape from L.A. movie.
Well, hopefully they'll rename the square Cootie Free Square.
Sanitized City Hall. Scrubbed of all the blemishes that we could possibly have in the city. City.
Tina Dupuy, thanks for joining us.
I knew I shouldn't have... shouldn't have put that last mint in my mouth. I'm still chewing on it as the thing ends. Sam Cedar talking to Tina Dupuy of crooksandliars.com on the Majority Report. Sorry for the audio problems at the end there, the slight breakup that seemed to have been going on of the audio, because that was streaming from the internet. Now on the second morning of December 2011 on Blacklisted Talk Radio. I'm King David McKenzie on killradio.org. By the way, Tina Dupuy had made mention of some reports of some really hacky news reports about the clearing out of about the raid of the lawn over at City Hall, and that particular report is also up on crooksandliars.com from KTTV Channel 11, one of the two Fox-owned TV stations here in Los Angeles. Now, here is the text that Tina puts up on crooksandliars.com to introduce this particular clip. This is Fox 11's Gigi Grissiet. Gigi doesn't cover Dodger games or the Rose Parade by mentioning the debris discarded by attendees, but apparently that's how she covers an international protest's local chapter. They have trash left behind after they've been arrested en masse. Gross trash, too. Way to inform the public. No question as to why 292 Angelenos all but volunteered to be arrested last night. This post is dated November the 30th. No mention of what nonviolent struggle has accomplished in American history, civil rights. No mention of the cruel irony of the protesters getting evicted because they brought homeless people to the steps of City Hall instead of the usual safe distance of two blocks east. No mention of the police involved and how the city decided to support the protest, then negotiated with them and then suddenly reneged, made apparent by the 1,400 LAPD officers in riot helmets on the streets of Los Angeles last night. But here's the thing that really makes this clip disgusting from a basic journalism perspective. Gigi doesn't know and did not find out what that mysterious white liquid was in those water bottles before she reported on them. She didn't know, and instead of being hesitant to make accusations or start any rumors, she just does it without pause. I saw her there at about 11 p.m. She was there all night and never asked anyone what it was before she went live. You're supposed to know more than the people on their couches watching you because you're on the scene. This is hackery at its worst. The white liquid is more than likely Maalox. They had it on site because it is supposed to neutralize the pain of pepper spray and tear gas. Yes, There's a story. There were hundreds of Angelenos willing to be pepper sprayed for a political statement. They were, their phrase, militantly nonviolent and had been spending days training and planning to be raided by police, and that is what that mysterious white liquid symbolized. That's what it meant. They were willing, to quote Mario Savio, to put their bodies upon the gears. Since I will always assume the best in people, I will guess it's just laziness. Just not caring about telling a real story about Occupy LA and opting for the essay, for the easy look at the stuff on the ground to fill up airtime. I say laziness and not incompetence or malice, but I'm feeling generous today. Tina Dupuy at crooksandliars.com on this particular report from media hack Gigi Graciette of KTTV Channel 11, the first Fox-owned TV station in Los Angeles.
And they were rounded up and brought to the jail in a bus, in buses that they collected all of these people. So again, this morning we have general services come through. I've already seen some people inspecting the damage here. They've been taking some pictures. They've had front loaders coming here picking up all of the debris here. And also behind me, we'll show you, this is City Hall here. And you can see there are now fences up. They put K-rails up here just to make sure that the occupiers don't just get out of jail and come back here. They can't. So there are officers inside, there are fences around, impossible to get back there unless they hop that fence. But the damage here, Steve, upwards of $160,000, according to the mayor's estimates.
All right, thank you, Bobby. We're going to go from you right now to Gigi Graciette, who's been in the middle of it for a long time downtown. Show us what's going on there. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Well, take a look over here. The cleanup is well underway. But before I show you a little bit of this city within a city, let's go straight to that video that we shot for you about 6.5 hours ago when the LAPD moved in. And we were right behind them. We were one of the pool cameras inside the park as the arrest went on. 1,400 LAPD officers, including their elite SWAT team, moved in. Most of the protesters heeded the order to disperse. They didn't want to get arrested. But there was a core group of diehard protesters that said, you know, you're going to have to force me out of this park. And that's what police ended up having to do, even though they climbed trees, they hid in the palm trees, they locked arms, they did dead weights and forced up 4 to 5 officers to have to carry each and every one of them out. So while there wasn't really any violence inside the park, they really made it hard for police to take them into custody. Back here live, I want to take you around Occupy LA. Check this out. Somebody cut their hair right here. Now, we're mentioning this because, you know, as I was walking from the live van for this live shot, Steve, this citizen, this man was just walking by, and he grabbed me and he said, hey, I want you to ask the city, how much is this going to cost to clean up this mess? So it is relevant. Protesters don't like us to talk about this part of the story, but you have to talk about it. Now, police, look at this bottle. There's a lot of bottles with yellow-colored liquid in it. And did you see the LAPD wearing hazmat suits? Well, they had heard that there were urine-filled bottles and that they maybe tossed at them. And we spotted a lot of these bottles. We don't know what's in them. To be fair, we don't. I want to show you this sign. There are a lot of health concerns. Check this out. This was near the food court. Can you read that? There's a really bad stomach flu going around. Please wash your hands. Feel free to take wipes. And, wow, because the city said there were a lot of, I want to show you this sign, because the city said there were a lot of health concerns. Check this out. This was near the food court. Can you read that? There's a really bad stomach flu going around. Please wash your hands. Feel free to take wipes. And, wow, there's so much stuff. I want to also show you here. There are dozens and dozens. I saw this last night in the dark. I didn't know what they were, but they're water bottles, and they're filled with, I don't know if it's ammonia, it's a foamy white liquid, There's not just one. There are dozens and dozens of these. And we actually saw a guy kick one towards cops last night. I was wondering what was in it. And I'm going to try to find out. But as you can see over here, there's just a bunch of them. So police really didn't know what was in store for them here. And we've seen monuments defaced, you know, maybe coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm going to show you a tribute bench to the lady. She was the wife of a councilman here in L.A., and she founded the Domestic Violence Hotline or Center for the City of L.A., and she's got a bench in her honor, and it's completely defaced. Graffiti, stickers. It's going to cost a lot of money to clean up this mess, that's for sure. And that's the latest from what was Occupy L.A. Back to you, Steve.
All right, Gigi Gracia, thank you very much. Now, the protesters who got arrested, remember the first...
And, most specifically, that was from the Good Day LA broadcast. I hope you were able to make out what that was. I did my best to crank up the volume on the stream. From Good Day LA, Wednesday morning, Steve Edwards, of course, the anchor there, Gigi Grissett, who... is what Olbermann sometimes refers to as a news actress. That's not what Tina Dupuy had in her text at crooksandliars.com, but that seems to fit the description there, because that's basically what the function that she has at Channel 11, because the news department there, of course, is under the same thumb as Fascist Noise Channel is. A guy I have heard him described as being an oversized testicle with legs. That's a description that I have heard from the guy running Fox News Channel. And at the moment, I don't know why. I have the guy's image, but I cannot recall the guy's name, which I suppose I should feel rather blessed that I've been able to forget something about that wretched individual. So I'm going to have to check it again on Wikipedia. I cannot believe... I cannot believe I have forgotten the man's name. Welcome to Friday. The weekend has started. Roger Ailes. I don't even have to complete the... the search on Wikipedia. Roger Ailes, the guy who screwed up my friend Tom Snyder's Tomorrow Show on NBC by coming up with these cockamamie ideas for that operation, and also the guy who was... producer of the Mike Douglas show, of all of the daytime talk shows of the 1960s and 1970s, I think only Pat Boone's show was more boring than the Mike Douglas show, but not by much. Because, of course, Pat Boone was always more boring than Mike Douglas. But Mike Douglas, I mean, had no idea how to run a show, but that, anyway. So Roger Ailes has control of the news department at Channel 11 here in Los Angeles, and therefore also Channel 13, because it's the same operation. As he does over Fascist Noise Channel. And so Gigi, of course, is a news actress as a result of having to be under the thumb of Brother Ailes. Now, to kind of wash out your ears after that, is a little something positive. This is from IndieBay.org. And this also is up on crooksandliars.com. And this originates from Occupy Oakland. Diane Sweet introduces with this text. Scott Olson, the Iraq war veteran injured at the Occupy Oakland encampment on October the 25th, has since been released from the hospital and gave his first interview yesterday. This is also from Wednesday, so it would be Tuesday that he gave the interview. In the interview, Scott talks about the challenges he faces after being hit in the head by a projectile at Occupy Oakland, specifically the traumatic brain injury he sustained and the weeks of therapy it took for him to regain his speech. In the video, it is evident that he still struggles a bit with speaking, but Olson states that he is doing much better than he was. Olson also addresses the city of Oakland and the Oakland Police Department, who are investigating the incident, stating that he is waiting to see what they are going to say about themselves. In their own investigations, he has not been interviewed by anyone investigating for the police department, nor has he heard anything at all from the district attorney's office. Olson also conveys at end of the interview that the Occupy movement was intended to be peaceful and should remain that way, that by working together and being open with one another would solve most of the problems that the movement faces with bureaucracy. Scott looks great, and it's obvious that he has worked very hard to regain his speech. He also has scars that are hidden underneath a bandana in the video. We wish him all the best and a speedy, complete recovery. As do I, incidentally. My name is King David McKenzie. This is Blacklisted Talk Radio on killradio.org out of Los Angeles, California. It is now 12.03 p.m. on the 2nd of December, 2011. And from Occupy Oakland, here is that interview, and from IndieBay.org, here is the interview with Mr. Scott Olson. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was just about to go to it, and for some reason or other, it is missing. That's bizarre. Okay, let me try to bring up another source on it. I'm now searching IndieBay.org for that video. Okay, now here we are. Not from crooksandliars.com, because that particular link has actually been removed, but from indiebay.org, here is the interview with Scott Olson.
My name is Scott Olson. I'm 24 years old. I'm an Iraq veteran, and I participate in Occupy.
Okay. Can you tell me when were you in Iraq?
I was in Iraq in 2006 to 2007. I was extended to stay for the surge, and I was also in there in 2008 for my second deployment.
Okay, and so you've been involved with Occupy Oakland more recently. What drew you to Occupy Oakland?
Well, originally I started with Occupy SF, and I just thought that Occupy Oakland was doing things a little differently. It was a bit different, so I came over here to check it out. And I liked what was being done here with the teach-ins and the community here, and I came back on October 25th. I saw a tweet or something that said you guys needed help. You guys need to support, so I had nothing better to do, so I jumped right in and came over here.
Okay, and that was when the raid was happening, or that was after the raid the next evening?
It was, well, I think the raid was that morning or something. I'm not.
Yeah, it was like about 5 a.m. that morning.
Right, and I was at work. Working all day, and I got off and got over to here. Like,
so you came for the march afterwards? Okay.
Yeah, I got here like at 7, like 20-ish.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of late. And then after being here for not too long, after standing up for our rights to exist here. With a veteran who was there with me, and all the people that were there, we were attacked, and I was victimized. I was attacked, and I ended up in the hospital that night.
Yeah, and the man you were standing with in the Navy uniform, did you know him personally, or you met him through Occupy Oakland?
I met him through Iraq Veterans Against the War after I moved out here.
Okay.
So I had known him, I knew him several times before. Mm-hmm. So he was a friend of mine.
Okay. And then they were shooting tear gas, and you were hit in the head. Can you tell me what you remember about that?
Well, I took a step back, and I walked across the right a little bit, and I had my phone out. I was texting or something to a friend of mine, And next thing I know, I'm down and on the ground, and there are people above me trying to help me, and they ended up carrying me away. I didn't want them to. I wanted to get up, stay there, pick up my bag, but they carried me away, and they asked me my name several times, and I couldn't answer them. I couldn't answer what. I don't know if I couldn't recall the answer or if I couldn't spit it out. But yeah, that's when I knew that, okay, it's time to go, time to let them take care of me.
Yeah. Did you understand what had happened at the time, that you had been hit in the head?
Not initially. I didn't know how I got wounded initially. I didn't... You know, I was down, and I didn't know right away how.
Okay, and then you were in the hospital for a little bit, right, recovering?
Uh-huh.
And can you tell me a little bit about the aftermath? I know that you said to me earlier today that your speech has been recovering. What other effects and... Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
It was a very frustrating process. Initially, I couldn't form any words. I couldn't make any words. But initially, like, my brain was all pretty much there. I'd have brain infarcts more often than everybody normally does. But... mentally, I was there, and I just couldn't spit these things out of my mouth, and they worked hard with me to get me better, and I am doing much better than when I look at myself a month ago, which was 2 days after the attack. You know, I was not doing good. But now I'm doing a lot better from them.
And what do you expect, your prognosis moving forward from here? I see you still wear a neck brace, and mm-hmm. you have a bandana probably covering some damage to your forehead.
Well, I wore the bandana anyway. It takes okay. the hair out of my face. But I've okay. got this scar. The brain is, you know, it's unique in how it works. I expect a fully recovery, but okay. I don't know.
Yeah. Is there anything you would like to say about the police who shot you? Do you believe it was an accident? Do you think they were aiming at you? Because my understanding is if it was a tear gas canister, they're supposed to shoot those in an arcing direction, not at somebody's head who's 20 feet in front of them.
That's supposed to be how it works, and right now I'm kind of waiting to see what they're going to say about themselves in their own investigation, see if they have... the integrity required of them.
Have you been interviewed for that yet?
No.
No, but they have let you know that there's an investigation going on?
Yep.
Do you have a timeline? Did they give you any kind of date?
You would think something like this wouldn't take too long to find out who's responsible, but it's been over a month. How long does it take to see who fired this at me?
And that's a police investigation. Do you have any knowledge of something from the district attorney's office? Do you know if they're pursuing anything?
I don't know.
Okay. They probably would have let you know if they were. Would you like to, this is just your chance to say what you want to say. Is there anything you'd like to just say in general to the politicians or the Chamber of Commerce or Occupy Oakland or, you know?
To all of them, I would have to say say peaceful, because that's what this about is about, working together, working with one another, and it's about being open with each other, and that's how we can solve our problems.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And from indiebay.org/Occupy Oakland, that is the interview with Scott Olson from actually from Monday, the 28th of November. And I thought that would be of particular import and interest for those of you listening today to Blacklisted Talk Radio. I'm King David McKenzie. 1216 on killradio.org. And a couple of other things from, at least one other thing, I should say, from crooksandliars.org that is not necessarily related to anything going on in California, not related to the Occupy movement, not related to anything we've spoken of yet. But Crooks and Liars has a fascinating item that you may want to check out, pay attention to here. This is from I believe this is from WKYT. I don't know. I don't recall exactly what city WKYT is licensed to, if it's Louisville, Lexington, where in Kentucky, but it is a Kentucky TV station. And here's the story. A small church in Pike Valley, Kentucky, has voted to ban interracial couples from most church activities, quote, to promote greater unity among the church body, end quote. Melvin Thompson, the former pastor of Gonair Free Will Baptist Church, Free Will, that is a very ironic word to invoke in this situation, proposed the ban after Susie Harville brought her fiancé, Ticha Chikuni, C-H-I-K-U-N-I, to services in June. Harville played the piano while Chikuni sang. Before stepping down as pastor in August, Thompson told Harville that her fiancé could not sing at the church again. Harville is white, and Chikuni is a native of Zimbabwe. He's black. Last Sunday, church members voted 9-6 in favor of Thompson's ban. Others attending the church business meeting declined to take a stand on the issue. The resolution states that the Gonair Free Will Baptist Church does not condone interracial marriage. Verbatim, quote, parties of such marriages will not be received as members, nor will they be used in worship services and other church functions, with the exception being funerals. All are welcome to our public worship services. The recommendation is not intended to judge the salvation of anyone, but is intended to promote greater unity among the church body and the community we serve. End quote. Harville told the Kentucky Herald Leader newspaper that the decision is an embarrassment to God, the church, and the whole community. She explained, "It sure ain't Christian. It ain't nothing but the old devil working." Harville and Ciccone plan to marry in July, but they won't be tying the knot in Pike County. The United States Supreme Court declared anti-miscegenation laws unconstitutional in a 1967 decision. By 2005, Stanford University sociologist Michael Rosenfeld determined that 7% of all marriages in the U.S. were interracial. And provided that the player is up and running, and the piece is up and running, here is that WKYT report from Pike County, Kentucky.
She says she is not welcome in the church she grew up in because her fiancé is from Africa. Good evening, I'm Steve Hensley.
And I'm Katie Roach, leading our news tonight. Stella Harville says the Pike County Church voted not to allow interracial couples to become members.
A lot of controversy out of this. WYNT's Angela Spartman spoke with Harville and joins us from the Big Sandy Newsroom with our top story at 6.
The Gulnare Free Will Baptist Church voted to not allow interracial couples to participate in church functions. Now, Stella Harville and her fiancé do not live in Pike County, but they do attend church there when she is at home. Now, the couple wants the church to change its stance. Stella Harville met Ticha Ciccone at Georgetown College.
He has such a huge faith.
They fell in love and are recently engaged. However, the news was not well received when she came home and attended the church she grew up in, the Gulnare Free Will Baptist Church. Church members voted to not allow interracial marriage.
It's just a travesty, especially of the Christianity that, you know, this church just goes this way. They've crossed the line in revoking my fiancé and I's right to worship in a public place. And it hurts even more that I've attended this church ever since I was a baby.
Ticha Ciccone is originally from Zimbabwe.
He just has one of those kindest hearts for God, and here this is happening. You know, people who have this backward way of thinking, you know, they should know that their racist actions should not and will not be tolerated.
Melvin Thompson, who started the initiative, told us he would not comment. Minister Stacy Stepp says he is trying to resolve the issue and says everyone is welcome at the Gulnare Free Will Baptist Church.
You know, I'm not gonna wish harmful things on these members who have decided to put our family through this.
The couple's July wedding will take place out of Pike County. I also talked to Harville's parents, who are members at the church. During the church's Wednesday night services, they plan to ask it to change its decision. But they say if the church does not change the decision, then they will look for a new church. And in the Big Sandy Newsroom, I'm Angela Sparkman. Back to you.
And that report was from WYMT television, not WKYT. Although I believe that the two co-owned, I'm going to have to check on that. The direct source on that is crooksandliars.com. I'm King David McKenzie. Blacklisted Talk Radio is the program on killradio.org from Los Angeles, California, 1224 on this Friday afternoon. Now, the 2nd of December, and we shall be continuing in just a few moments. Stay with us.